We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Well, it is Wednesday, September 25th, and today the House is going to vote on a clean three-month continuing resolution instead of a continuing resolution with the SAVE Act attached. And that does not sit well with a lot of conservatives, and especially those members in Congress who have been pushing to just simply secure our election. So let's welcome in Representative Chip Roy from the great state of Texas. And Chip, you know, we've been talking about this for the last couple days on this program. And, you know, my question for you is, what exactly happened where the speaker just compromised all the leverage that he possibly had? Because this, if we were going to push for the SAVE Act, this would have been the moment to do it. And good morning.
Good morning, Jenna. Great to be on. So we're going to do what we always do in Washington, which was predictable, like the sun coming up, that we will get to the end of September and pass a continuing resolution. For all your listeners, they generally are educated and understand that, that will fund government at current levels, which is basically a spending freeze, if you will, through December, or into December, December, in this case, December 20th, right before Christmas. That is by design for the appropriators, the uniparty, if you use that pejorative term to mean the swamp, all the creatures here who want their appropriations bills, they want big defense spending, they want, you know, all of their programs. And so we wanted to avoid that. So what we set out to do back in really July, and when we started talking about this, after we had passed the SAVE Act, which is an 80-plus percent issue, which, as you know and your listeners know, would require documentary proof of citizenship to vote in federal elections to fix current law from it being able to be abused to allow non-citizens to vote. So we thought that gets a highly popular issue. It's on point with our open border. It divides Democrats. We had five Democrats who voted for it in July. It would have put Senate Democrats on the spot, people like John Tester and others, and it would have set up a good fight to actually bring us to the point of a potential shutdown to force the issue. Now, what happened? Well, we should have done it in July, but we didn't. But we were over August debating this. We come back the first week of September. That was the plan. The speaker moved it forward. The speaker argued for it. I argued for it. Mike Lee argued for it over in the Senate, his bill over there. And unfortunately, a small group of my conservative colleagues, with whom I agree a lot, if not almost all the time, they did not want to vote for a continuing resolution at all. And then would say something like, well, this is just going to, you know, be a shiny object. This is all fake. And this will just result in a short-term CR anyway. Well, in my view, that was a self-fulfilling prophecy. By shooting down that plan, it now left us with no plan. And then the inevitability would then arise, which is a CR into December. So that's where we've ended up. Now, one can question that, and one can be mad at Mike, the speaker, and say, well, you shouldn't put that on the floor. Well, and then we're having that debate even through today, right? So we're going to be voting today. It's on a, it's called suspension, on the suspension of the rules, meaning we're just going to have a vote today. Democrats will vote overwhelmingly for it. Republicans, I don't know what the mix will be. I'm going to guess something like half and half, maybe a little more for it and a fewer against it, but it'll be close to 50-50, and we will pass it. Well, the question really then is, what do you have a shutdown over if we could convince, you know, the speaker to have a shutdown? At this point, you've got for everybody listening, you've got probably 20 Republicans in close races, people like Mike Garcia in California, people like Mark Bolinaro in New York, Nick LaLota in New York. You've got probably 20 or so in battleground districts that say a shutdown will kill their chances 4 weeks out from an election. The only way to have defeated that would to have had a long-term message building up to this, so there was a central fight that you could go sell. We have not done that. We were starting to, and then we chose not to vote for that bill. So that's where we stand. I'm not going to vote for the CR. I can't do that. I don't believe we should do it. But that's the box that we're currently in.
And that's a really disappointing reality, but, you know, like a lot of things that have come out of Congress lately, and I know that we've talked about a lot of those things. So why are Republicans so afraid of messaging on from the left on a shutdown? Because if this had moved forward and the SAVE Act had been attached to the CR and the Democrats voted it down, they would have been responsible for a government shutdown.
So that has always been my philosophy, right, dating back well back to the 1995 shutdown with the Newt Gingrich world, the 2013 shutdown that Ted Cruz, when I was his chief of staff, and we were fighting over Obamacare implementation, a righteous fight. This, of course, a righteous and important fight. The if I were going to argue for some of my Republican colleagues who say that it would hurt them, there are, and I'm just trying to give you their argument straight up. Their argument is, hey, I'm in a D+8 district. I'm in a D+12 district, because some of them are, right? Mike Garcia is in a D+X district. You know, Molinar is in a pretty 50-50 district, or D+1 or 2. I think LaLota is D+whatever. Mike Lawler is D+whatever, I think. I can't remember everybody's districts, but, you know, they're pretty tough districts. They would say they're polling their people that if they have a shutdown 4 weeks out from the election, especially when you then factor in some of the people saying, well, if we have a hurricane in Florida and all these things, that they will not be able to defeat that. That even the message, whoever's going to get blamed, you say, well, you blame the president or you blame. They don't believe they can survive it. Now, I have to then argue with them, yes, you can, right? So I go back to my point. Had Republicans been united on picking the fight and messaged it and done it, frankly, through July, we should have done this at the end of July. We should have messaged it through August into September. Had the American people behind us, elevated pressure on the Democrats, now you've got a strong message you can go win. If we go do this right now, we've been kind of waffling on the message for the last 2 or 3 weeks, and now it's going to be a little bit even harder, like heading in October, and that's what their argument would be. Again, I would have set up the fight. I would have set up the construct. I would have laid it in Democrats' laps, and if they were the ones that were going to walk away from it, let them shut it down. You know, we'd be. And by the way, the other element of this is, our bill was a 6-month continuing resolution plus the SAVE Act. Why did we do that? So that no matter what, you wouldn't end up with a CR ending in December setting up a Christmas omnibus. We did the 6-month into March because if at the very end of the deal, the moderates or President Trump or anybody said, hey, we've picked this fight, we've shut the government down, it's October 5th, let's go ahead and do a deal to fund the government, you could off-ramp to 6 months, blame the Democrats for the SAVE Act, and you'd at least get the funding into March. That was the whole point of setting it up. But again, respectfully, some people on the right were critical of myself, Mike Lee, and others for promoting this, calling us rhinos, because we dared to put out a proposal that would construct a fight we thought we could at least take up to a possible shutdown and go win the fight. So that's where we are, a difference of opinion on tactics. I believe we set up the right fight. Some conservatives that are normally our friends shot it down, and then that leaves us in this position.
And this position seems to be the worst of all possible options because it is a 3-month CR that will expire if it goes through on December 20th, which sets up the Christmas fight and all those things and doesn't have the SAVE Act. And so where is the Republican coalition? And I think this is kind of an ongoing question that, you know, why can't Republicans get their messaging and their priorities together and have a coalition that just everybody's on board? Okay, this is the plan. Let's do it. Because you have to have, you know, one team like the Democrats often do.
So you're correct. This is the worst option. It was, though, I must say very clearly to those listening, it was the guaranteed outcome. It was the predicted end result after you shoot down a fight and you shoot down picking out something we could message with a six-month CR plus SAVE Act. Once you shot that down, then the absolute landing spot is going to be a CR into December. So that's why I was so frustrated by my very small handful of friends who shut that down. There were 14 who voted against it, two who voted present. Of the 14 who voted against it, a couple of them were appropriators and people who don't like having they don't want a December CR. I'm sorry, they didn't want a March CR because they want the December CR, right? The appropriators, defense hawks, they want it into December because they believe they'll be able to get a big omnibus bill to get their defense spending stuff. So you ask, why is this the situation? And look, all of this boils down to how you get to where you got. So we're a year into, right, Speaker McCarthy having been taken down, which I disagreed with, right? I was one that thought we should keep working. We were moving the needle. We had the agreement with them. We got the HR2 passed in border security. We got caps put in place, even though they were weaker than I wanted. And, you know, the result of that, by the way, even though you and I would like to cut government more, your listeners would like to cut government more, we have, in fact, held non-defense spending flat. Like, we literally have held it flat for 2 years. We have only increased defense spending with money that we got out of the COVID funds and IRS cuts. We pulled some of that out. So, you know, we've had a big fight on HR2. We've passed bills that, like the SAVE Act. We've been moving the needle. And by the way, we do have a Chuck Schumer-led Senate and Joe Biden in the White House. So you have to then just figure out, how can you unite to get to shutdown? One of the key things we're going to have to do as Republicans, because this now is already baked, right? This is going to happen. We got to go win the election. The speech I gave to Republicans and to the Speaker this week was, on November 6th, if we are blessed enough to have the trifecta, which is going to take a massive amount of work to do, assume we do, we need to sit down in a room and figure out who the heck we are and what we're going to unite to accomplish. And that includes some of our moderates in tight districts, our Freedom Caucus and conservative allies, our appropriators, and we got to decide what we're willing to risk our election certificates to do at least like Democrats do when they go do it for Obamacare or they go do it for their big leftist priorities. What are we willing to put it all on the line for to guarantee that a President Trump can accomplish X, Y, and Z? We've got to cut spending. We've got to secure the border. We've got to get permanent reforms in place. We've got to, you know, make good decisions on how we can root out a lot of the corruption and weaponize government and so forth. So that's my two cents. You know, we've been talking a lot the last couple of days with Callie Means and Robert Kennedy. I had lunch with them 2 days ago talking about a healthy America and trying to stop all the poisoning of our foods and all that. There's a lot of things we can do, but we have to unite to do it. So I'm encouraging Republicans. We got to retreat, sit down, not retreat like verb. We got to go pull into a room as Republicans and sit down and make sure we're all aligned, all of us, and agreed to go accomplish 1, 2, 3.
And I'm speaking with Representative Chip Roy from the great state of Texas. And do you think that's even possible with this type of Republican coalition that does include a lot of, you know, far right conservatives, Freedom Caucus, a lot of moderates? I mean, it's not as coalesced as Democrats. Is it even possible to agree on those priorities?
Well, we have to. So, you know, I just think this is where leadership is going to matter. That's not a statement against anybody or for anybody. I'm just saying we are going to need a group of us to come together no matter what. This is that time, right? Like, you know, you didn't all agree on strategy in World War II and, you know, go back and read the history and, you know, different thoughts and how we dealt with, you know, the Normandy invasion and whatnot. But, you know, once you're doing it, the leaders have decided to go do it, you must unite and you must carry out the plan. And so that's what I think we've got to figure out how to do. Let me be on the more optimistic side. I think we're closer than we've been in a long time. I think conservatives have been rightly pushing things in a direction to go deliver on what we said we would. The speaker agreement from 18 months ago yielded significant results. We had more votes on amendments than we've had in decades. We had real issues that were being brought forward because of that. We accomplished the things I mentioned a minute ago on the phone, HR2, Limit Save Grow, and so forth. And, you know, we got 5 appropriations bills passed, 7 appropriations bills passed last year. But on those divides where we have disagreements, we're going to have to figure out how to how to achieve the result. But there's going to be tough issues, right? Tax policy, right? We want low taxes, but those things cost a lot. And we have to figure that out, which ones are pro-growth and pay for themselves, which ones aren't. We're going to have to figure out how we deal with the debt and actually deal with the spending problem. So we have very real issues. We've got to get behind, you know, closed doors, fight it out. And then when you come out, like my World War II analogy, you got to storm the beaches of Normandy and go win. So we don't have a choice. That's what we have to do, Jenna.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, and it needs to be a team. And I know from just knowing Speaker Johnson personally, even before he became Speaker, he always has said that Congress is a team. And, you know, he analogizes it sometimes to like a football team, and it's you have to have leadership, but you have to actually go and work as a team rather than think of your offices as, you know, individual priorities and collaborate together, especially when you're in the majority. So that makes sense, and I hope that Republicans can get it done and even before the election. But in the last few minutes I have with you, Representative Chip Roy, I wanted to ask you also about the Trump campaign yesterday says that President Trump was briefed by U.S. intelligence officials about, quote, real and specific threats from Iran to assassinate him in an effort to destabilize and sow chaos in the United States. This coming from CNN's Caitlin Collins. Intelligence officials have identified that these continued and coordinated attacks have heightened in the past few months, and law enforcement officials across all agencies are working to ensure President Trump is protected and the election is free from interference. That is what the Trump campaign spokesman said in response. So what are your thoughts on this? Because a lot of conservatives are raising questions about whether this is a false flag. What are your thoughts on this just potential headline?
Well, first of all, I was not a part of the briefing from the intelligence community on this. I've read the same reports and have been having conversations with some of my colleagues the last day or so. It is not surprising in general, whatever the veracity of the specific claims or not, it would not be surprising that there are, in fact, we've seen assassination attempts on the president now twice in 3 months. Yesterday in the continuing resolution, what was included before it was put on the floor that we voted out of the Rules Committee did include, I think, another $240 million or something like that. I might have made the number up, of additional resources for the Secret Service contingent upon whatever we're putting out in our report about Secret Service reform, which even Democrats have called for. So there was agreement on needing to at least bolster what they're doing for protecting the president, presidential candidates here through the election in November and through January. Clearly, we have, look, here's the bottom line. The incompetence, the absolute disaster that is the Biden-Harris administration with respect to our borders, with respect to how they administer things, they're focusing on wokeness and, you know, all of the nonsense, it is emboldening our enemies. That is 100% true. It is true about Iran. It is true about China. It is true about Russia. It is true about every single enemy around the globe. That is why this election matters so much. Every single issue, we are going to lose this country because of what this administration is doing to attack our values, attack Western civilization. They're looking at us. They know it is, we're feckless. And look, I'm just telling you, this election is going to be close. In every single district in this country, the only way we can guarantee we win it is to show up and vote, as President Trump says, too big to rig. We've got to show up and win this. Everything is at stake. This administration is tearing down everything that is Trudeau's, including the rule of law. Secret Service is all over the place, and they're culturally broke. The FBI is culturally broke. Our defense is hanging on by a thread while they're getting eat out from the inside by wokeness and the ideology. We need real leadership. We need to clean out the brass of the Pentagon. We need to clean out the top of all these bureaucracies. We need to reboot the core purpose of the federal government. Stop spending money we don't have. Secure the border of the United States. Restore our military. Restore peace through strength. And the only way we're going to do that is if we sweep the election in November. So, you know, we know what is in front of us, and we've got to do it over the next 5 weeks.
Well, Representative Chip Roy, really appreciate your thoughts and comments. And you're absolutely right that this election matters. And this is why we always encourage people to go out and vote your values. Vote for truth. Vote for the legitimacy of government and not for the ideology and the worldview of leftism that you're seeing. I mean, this does come down to a worldview and a view of government, what government should be doing, what they shouldn't be doing. So always appreciate your comments. We are always praying for you. And everyone else on Capitol Hill to continue to fight the good fight and continue to stay strong. So thank you so much, and we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. If ending babies' lives in their mother's womb isn't heartbreaking enough, the Biden-Harris administration punishes those who protect life, including up to 10 years in jail. In a shocking stance, the Democrats' vice presidential nominee, Tim Walz, supports infanticide, meaning the death of newborns. When will this madness end? Preborn's network of clinics is positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, on standby to protect and love mothers facing unplanned pregnancies. By introducing a woman to her baby through ultrasound and showering her with God's love, her baby's chance at life doubles. But they can't do it without our help. If you are pro-life, please consider a donation of any size to support the mission of Preborn. All gifts are tax deductible and will help defend the defenseless. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds is $140. $5,000 will sponsor ultrasounds for Preborn's entire network for a full day. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR, preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Well, speaking of priorities that Washington really does need to accomplish, and if we could all get it together and actually look at priorities that would continue to make America great or make America great again, which isn't just a campaign slogan. It's actually something that all of us should want in a nonpartisan fashion. We should want America to be free and prosperous and protecting all of our rights. And as Robert Kennedy Jr. is continuing to push is this whole notion of MAHA, or Make America Healthy Again. And at a roundtable in Washington, D.C., he unleashed on the corrupt health agencies. This is part of what he had to say about America's healthcare system. Cut three.
Politicians from both parties often say we have the best healthcare system in the world. That is a lie. The U.S. healthcare system is an existential threat to our country. If the American experiment fails, it will not be because we had the wrong marginal tax rate. It won't be because we don't have the perfectly optimized level of social safety net setting spending. It won't be because of the culture war and DEI issues and the media that the media trumpets to orchestrate the division among all of us. No, if America fails, the chief reason will be because we let our country get sicker, more depressed, fatter, more infertile, at an increasing rate, while crippling our national security, bankrupting our national budget with health care costs. Every major pillar of the U.S. health care system, as a statement of economic fact, makes money when Americans get sick. The most valuable asset in this country today is a sick child. The pharma industry, the hospital industry, and medical school industry make more money when there are more interventions to perform on Americans. And by requiring insurance companies to take no more than 15% of premiums, Obamacare actually incentivized insurance companies to raise premiums to get 15% of a larger pie. This is why premiums have increased 100% since the passage of Obamacare, making healthcare the largest driver of inflation while American life expectancy plummets. We spend four times per capita on health care than the Italians, but Italians live 7.5 years longer than us on average. Are we, and incidentally, Americans had one of the highest life expectancies in the world when I was growing up. Today, we've fallen an average of 6 years behind our European neighbors. Are we lazier and more suicidal than Italians, or is there a problem with our system? Are there problems with our incentives? Are there problems with our food?
All right. Well, let's welcome in a raw egg nationalist who is the author and co-founder of Kindred Harvest and the author of The Eggs Benedict Option, talks a lot about health. So good morning, raw egg. And with RFK Jr.'s focus on America's health and the healthcare system, this is a really important issue. What can and should be done in the U.S.?
It's a pleasure to speak to you again, Jenna. Thanks for having me. So, yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with a single word of what RFK Jr. said in that clip. He's absolutely right, I think, to say that America's healthcare crisis, America's health crisis, is an existential problem that is linked to every facet of national life. And, you know, he talks about processed food, about toxic chemicals, about the fertility crisis in particular. And it's very, very clear to me that there needs to be a fundamental change. And that's exactly what RFK Jr. is talking about. You know, he's saying, look, we don't just need to get people exercising. We don't just need to increase healthcare provision. What we actually need to do is we need to change the way that we live, and we need to change the way that that Americans are governed, the way that Americans regulate chemicals, the way that they regulate their food. And so, I mean, I think it's very clear that, you know, if Trump gets in and he does appoint RFK Jr. as a kind of health czar, as a kind of, you know, sort of minister for health, whatever you want to call him, then as long as he gives him the powers, I think, to confront big organizations, the regulators, the FDA, the CDC, et cetera, and also to regulate corporations as well, then I think he could actually really bring about a fundamental change to the way that, that the American system works, the food system, the regulatory system for chemicals, the management of the environment, schooling, et cetera, the food system, all of it, I think, is actually in play now, now that RFK Jr. is on board with Trump.
Yeah, and it's certainly in the national conversation, which is a great thing, because so often in policy, we've been talking a lot about the healthcare system and, you know, going to get care after you're sick or after you have all of these different conditions that are directly related and can be directly traced back to what we consume and what we eat and how we take care of our bodies. There hasn't been a lot of national conversation, unfortunately, around preventative measures or mitigation of these things. And I think that's where RFK is shifting the conversation to say, well, wait a minute, instead of just talking about when we have to go to the emergency room or to the doctor or the price of prescriptions, why not say, well, what is causing that? And instead of being on, you know, 17 different medications for the rest of your life, why don't we actually look at what we eat? And so, you know, is there a possibility that this could potentially actually be bipartisan, or is this something that, you know, in the United States, because of how the FDA has really frankly allowed all of these things to poison our food system, it's going to be a much bigger fight than maybe even we realize?
I think it absolutely should be a bipartisan issue. There's no question that the health of the nation should be a concern for left and right and center. You know, everybody in the U.S., all politicians should be invested in this. They should be interested in making sure that actually Americans aren't just given the best treatments, but actually that they're the healthiest people in the world, full stop, to begin with, and that actually it's not about ad hoc treatments. It's actually about fostering health and ensuring that the nation, you know, is healthy. But actually, I think part of the problem is that, as we've seen now, and this is a line that the Trump campaign has been pushing, the left, the Democrats, the Democratic Party, have lined up on the side of big corporations. You know, it used to be the case that it was a central part of the leftist message and the leftist movement to be anti-corporation, to be anti-big business, and you know, to sort of take the side of the little man. But actually now, the Democrat Party is aligned with the interests of big business and giant organizations against ordinary people. And so actually, I think the scope for this to be a bipartisan issue actually is potentially quite limited. And there will probably be quite a lot of pushback, I think, from the Democrats and indeed from people on the right as well in the Republican Party, because, of course, You know, you've got big business interests, big pharma, big ag. You know, a lot of establishment conservatives, a lot of establishment Republicans in the U.S. They get their support, they get their influence, they get their money from these big corporations and institutions that have an interest in maintaining the system as it is. So I actually think that what should be a bipartisan issue is likely to be actually, you know, the sort of a very, very divisive issue politically, which is a shame. But I think if they have the will to push on, if RFK Jr. has real powers and he has the backing of Trump to go as far as he needs to go, then he can actually do something very, very meaningful.
Yeah, and I think, unfortunately, you're right that everything, it seems like, is somebody is on a different side, and you know there are definitely special interests. There's a lot of money involved. I mean, you talk about big ag, big pharma, especially. They certainly don't want people to live their lives not having to take their 17 different prescriptions because that's how they make money, and they make money based on people needing those supplies rather than just independently being healthy. But as you're talking about, you know, potentially RFK being this kind of health czar for a Trump administration, what would you say his top priorities should be in an immediate sense that actually could be accomplished without, you know, some of these other special interest fights?
Well, I think fundamentally what he needs to do is he needs to reform the major institutions. He needs to do away with this system, this kind of revolving door system, it's often referred to, you know, where regulators who work at, say, the FDA regulate, they work to regulate new pharma products, for example, and then they go and work for those pharma companies, which is a clear conflict of interest. And this happens across the board in all the big regulatory industries. You know, you have people going from regulating industries to working for those industries. That needs to end. You know, there should be no conflicts of interest. And so RFK Jr. needs to look at personnel. He needs to put in place new systems that prevent the industries that are being regulated from exerting undue influence on the organizations that are supposed to regulate them. He can do that. He absolutely can do that. If he has the power to control appointments and ensure that appointments don't have these clashes, these conflicts of interest, then that would be a very good start. And I think that would mean, for example, that the drug licensing system of the FDA, you know, they don't end up bringing to market drugs that actually don't work necessarily, that might even be harmful. That would be a very good start, and I could definitely see him doing that.
Yeah, well, and those are all really great starts, and I hope that this does shift the national conversation even further. And even if there is a Kamala Harris administration, that the right and the conservatives continue to push this issue. It is incredibly important, and making America healthy should be one of our top priorities instead of just being given over to some of these special interests and lobbying dollars and all of these things. So I think it's fascinating, and I think that RFK is really changing, like I said, the national conversation around this. So, you know, we'll continue to talk about this. And Raw Egg Nationalist, always really appreciate your insights. You can follow him on X and also get his book, The Eggs Benedict Option. And he's also the co-founder of Kindred Harvest. So we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And as we are continuing to monitor the situation in the Middle East, the former CIA director, Leon Panetta, claims Israel detonating Hezbollah's pagers is terrorism, which, of course, this attack is the opposite of terrorism. It's precisely targeted to hit Hezbollah terrorists and their leadership. So it's actually an attack on terrorism. But this coming from Town Hall this morning, former CIA director Leon Panetta called the mass detonation of Hezbollah pagers and walkie-talkies a, quote, form of terrorism. system. The ability to be able to place an explosive in technology that is very prevalent these days and turn it into a war of terror. So let's bring on our friend Joel Rosenberg, who is the editor-in-chief of All Israel News. And good morning, Joel. And I would think that you have a pretty pointed response to those comments from the former CIA director. And hopefully we have Joel.
Hi, Jenna.
Yes. Hi.
Good to see you.
Good morning.
Good to hear you.
Yeah. Did you hear my question, or do I need to repeat that?
If you would repeat it, you guys blanked out for just a second.
Yeah, sorry about that. Hopefully, this is why we have some great connections. But at least, are you in Israel now? Are you back in Jerusalem from D.C.?
I'm not. I'm actually in California right now, so it
well,
should
that's
be working
why.
Better.
No, that's why. We'll blame it on Governor Newsom. That makes way more sense. Okay, all right. Well, we were talking about the former CIA director's comments saying that Israel detonating Hezbollah's pagers is terrorism, and said the ability to place explosives in technology that is very prevalent these days and turn it into a war of terror. I mean, I think that Newsom just hung up on us. Well, we'll try to get Joel Rosenberg back. Again, sorry for the tech issues this morning to all of our listeners, but I will go on a little bit of a rant while we're trying to do to get him back and say that this is so ridiculous that the left continues to blame Israel for what I think is clearly a proportional response to their initiation of terrorism. I mean, we are coming up on the anniversary of October 7th and the terrorist attack. And I'm told that we have Joel Rosenberg back. But Joel, my comment was, I'm so sick of all of the leftists blaming Israel for actually going after the terrorists that perpetuated this horrific attack on October 7th. Why are they claiming that detonating Hezbollah's pagers, which was such actually a really amazing feat. I had a guest on, Eric Prince, who was saying he was actually jealous of the IDF's technology there and their ability to carry this out. But yet, everybody seems to be blaming Israel.
Jenna, this is a terrible example of the moral bankruptcy of the senior leaders within the Democratic Party. I mean, to have Leon Panetta, who previous to this, I would have said I respect. He's somebody, for example, who as defense secretary under President Obama advised President Obama to go and send U.S. special forces into Pakistan to get and kill Osama bin Laden. Right. It was then Vice President Joe Biden who opposed sending U.S. forces to go kill the top terrorist in the world. Panetta was for it, however. But for Leon Panetta to accuse Israel of terrorism by having this ingenious strategy to kill or wound thousands of Hezbollah terrorists all in one moment by putting small explosive devices in both walkie-talkies and pagers for almost the entire senior Hezbollah leadership and the mid-range terrorists, it's moral bankruptcy. I mean, it shows how much key Democrats have decided that Israel is the problem, that killing terrorists is not the objective anymore. And I just look at this and I say, this is a mistake. I was with Senator Tim Scott the other day in Washington just a couple of days ago, and we did an article for All Israel News. It's up today, and I just tweeted it out also, or sent it out by X. But he said he is so concerned that President Biden and Vice President Harris are abandoning Israel, not wholesale. He says just they're moving away further and further, not standing closely with Israel. And he said, look, there are biblical mandates to stand with Israel, to bless Israel. And if you don't, he said, I'm worried that the Biden and Harris are setting America on a direction in which God would lift his favor off of our country. And when you think of all the other troubles we're having right now, this is very, very dangerous. And I think Senator Scott is right.
Yeah, I agree with him as well. And for those listening, I just reposted that article from Joel Rosenberg. You can follow him on X at Joel C. Rosenberg. And also on my X page now, we have that repost. And I mean, this is just true that any nation, any family, any church that doesn't follow God's design, then there is no indication that God will make that a fruitful endeavor, or that he will bless those actions, and that we would suffer the consequences of intentional disobedience. And so, of course, Senator Scott is correct. And this is where a lot of, I think, young people need to understand the Abrahamic covenants to Israel in the Old Testament that have not gone away. I mean, these are things that are enduring promises in terms of Israel being able to occupy the land. And that's, you know, why America should stand with Israel, because we believe that God has his promises and that he will fulfill those, and that we believe that he said what he meant. And not just that Israel is God's chosen people, and not in terms of soteriology or salvation, but because we know the Gentiles have been grafted in, and we're post-cross and Christ right. coming, all of those things. And so we need to understand, though, why it's so important for America to stand with Israel. And this is my concern with a Kamala Harris administration, not just that, you know, she's not standing with Israel, but I don't think that the concept of God's promises and taking the Old Testament covenant seriously has even crossed anybody's mind on the Democrat side.
Well, look, I think that what we're watching is moral bankruptcy across the board inside the Democratic Party. And that's what's making even bipartisanship in this country so difficult, right? Even the tone and the style of politics is getting more and more difficult. Because in the old days, if the Democrats wanted taxes to be at 50% and Republicans wanted to be at 35%, let's say, and they try to negotiate, you know, a common ground, let's settle it somewhere in between, that's bipartisan negotiation. And that makes sense, right? You know, these are not major moral issues. They're policy issues. They have moral implications. But when you have a Democratic Party now that doesn't believe that a baby is an actual human being in the womb and that you should be able to murder it all the way up to the ninth month, there's not any way to compromise on that. When the Democratic Party, the President of the United States and Vice President Harris believe that parents should be forced to allow their son or daughter, who's a young teenager, to take puberty blockers and to have body-altering surgery and be forced to do it, or not even told that it's going to happen and not even have to have their permission, how do you compromise on that? When you have a situation in which America's number one ally in history, much less in the Middle East particularly, is under attack from seven different directions, and yet the Biden-Harris administration says they're pro-Israel, but keeps stalling the supply, the resupply of weapons and missile interceptors to the ally, in this case Israel, how is that really being pro-Israel? And if they keep pressuring Israel to not escalate, what in the world is President Biden and Vice President Harris talking about? Israel is not escalating. Israel is responding to almost 10,000 missiles that have been fired at Israel by Hezbollah in Lebanon. We are responding. We're not escalating. But there's some sort of moral confusion that is so deep on so many issues that even a person who is not trying to be partisan, who's not trying to, you know, who wants to say, look, I want to work with people on all sides, but they make it so difficult because they're taking positions that make no sense. And by the way, all our other allies in the world are watching, right? So when you mistreat Israel, the Taiwanese are watching, the South Koreans are watching, the Japanese are watching when it comes to the China threat or to the North Korean threat. Obviously, Ukraine is watching. All of Europe is watching. The entire world is watching that Biden and Harris don't know how to stand with an ally that's under missile attack from seven different directions. And I worry, yeah, that God may be getting close to being done with the United States. We're not there yet, but this is very, very dangerous when you take all of our other national mistakes and sins and you add increasing abandonment of Israel to it.
Yeah, and we don't even want to walk close to the line. We want to be a nation that recognizes and worships our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and does not have all of these moral failings. And, you know, as we've been talking, Joel Rosenberg, my special guest this morning, editor-in-chief of All Israel News, you can find that at allisrael.com. When we're talking about how Hezbollah is actually the perpetrator of terrorism, this reminds me, this response from the left reminds me of how the left just reinvents and reimagines and redefines all of these terms. It's like they can't even define what a terrorist means anymore. I mean, almost the same way they can't define what a woman is.
You're right. No, that's exactly right. And let's take a very practical example for those listening to your show who feel like, Joel, I still don't understand why should the administration care what Israel is doing right now or support Israel? Well, let me give you an example. In 1983, the Iranian regime told Hezbollah, this terror organization that Iran funds, built, trains, and directs and arms in Lebanon, Iran told Hezbollah to send two suicide bombers driving trucks to attack the U.S. Marine barracks in Beirut at that time and another diplomatic facility. This resulted in hundreds of Americans murdered that day in 1983. We're coming up on the October anniversary of that. Now, the mastermind of that attack by Hezbollah against Americans, not against Israelis, against American citizens and French and other NATO forces, was a man named Fouad Choukri. Now, Fouad Choukri was never hunted down, never arrested, never killed, never brought to justice by the American government for more than 40 years. And Israel assassinated him a few weeks ago. And, President Biden should be celebrating the fact that the United States government has an ally that will do for the American people what the American government itself did not do or could not do or refused to do for 40 years. Israel brought to justice a man who killed more Americans in one moment than any other person besides Osama bin Laden. And yet, Biden and Harris are not celebrating our ally. They're not arming our ally. They're not defending our ally. They're not encouraging our ally. They're constantly pressuring Israel to stand down, not to escalate. And let's add the fact that Biden and Harris and Senator Chuck Schumer really want regime change in Israel. They have been very clear. They don't want Prime Minister Netanyahu to remain prime minister. They want him to step out, even though he's the democratically elected prime minister of the state of Israel. The United States government has no place to try to pressure Israel to get rid of its own leader. If there's elections, fine. We have a very robust democracy in Israel. But this is an abandonment of an ally, and it has terrible consequences when an American government, the world's only superpower, sends messages to any ally, much less simultaneously to all of our allies, you cannot trust us. You cannot trust America to be there for you. And America cannot go fight every fight in the world. We shouldn't fight every fight in the world. We've got a lot of enemies, but we need allies who are willing and able to fight our enemies with our help, but without our sons and daughters with their boots on the ground. And yet this is the exact opposite of this.
Yeah, so well said. Jill Rosenberg, I really appreciate all of your comments and having you on so often to provide updates. We'll be praying for you in the state of California. But thanks so much. And this is why, ladies and gentlemen, elections matter, not just to what's going on here domestically, but also what we do in terms of foreign policy and our allies abroad. So we need to vote our values, vote on truth, and vote for the Christian worldview of government and the United States. So we're already out of time this morning, but you can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at afr.net. Pray for Florida as we get hit from the hurricane tomorrow, and I'll see you tomorrow morning.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.